I often find myself a lot more comfortable reading price patterns than bringing my eyes down a little bit to the lower pane of the price chart and trying to understand the spikes of volume that comprise the crowd's participation in the markets. Reading volume is a completely different skill than reading price patterns. Price patterns in some way are more objective than trying to read volume. They're straightforward. Price can either go up or price can go down. Markets either rally or they fail. But the crowd's participation in the mechanics that produce rallies and sell-offs is a completely different animal. Now, we have to start somewhere. And most price charts, with most price charts, you start with volume histograms that are below those price panes. Volume histograms come in two different varieties. You have the black and white ones, which are basically just black bars that show that go up so high depending on how much volume came into the market through those in that price chart. And you have the colored ones, which show green for an up day of participation and red for a down day of participation. Now, I find these red and green histograms to be a lot more valuable than the black and white type of charts that are still fairly common out there. A lot of charting programs, amazingly, don't easily produce red and green histogram volume bars, or volume histograms, excuse me. But if you have the opportunity and you have a choice to make between those black histograms or those colored histograms, go for the colored one. It's real important for your eye to pick up when that intensive participation of the crowd yields to a rally or an up day, or when that intensive participation of the crowd leads to a down day. But that's really only the first step. The crowd, unfortunately, doesn't act in a very logical manner. They act according to their rational or emotional participation at any point in time. Now, we always talk about the emotional crowd. Unfortunately, the crowd doesn't generate all that much emotion most of the time. Since markets spend about 80% or 85% of their time in ranges as opposed to trends, that time spent in ranges is generally accompanied with a crowd that has a much lower level of emotional participation than during those periods when the market is ramping in price change upward or dropping like a rock in price change downward. So the crowd is not necessarily the emotional crowd during most of its life on a stock chart. It acts within emotional boundaries, and within those boundaries, really, that's an area of reason in which decisions are made according to mental processes, according to interests, according to biases, and a fairly understandable level of gain and loss is being taken where the participant is not feeling an extensive amount of pain or pleasure. Within these smaller boundaries, technicians and traders can really gain by moving in very, very closely. When a congestion pattern forms, whether it's sort of a boxy rectangle kind of thing or a triangle kind of thing, moving close to the price bars and watch the small rallies and sell-offs that take place within that smaller environment. You want to see, as the price rises and falls, who's sort of taking the advantage as volatility is starting to wind down. And the price chart is starting to get duller and duller. Now, over the course of a congestion pattern, total participation tends to drop, drop down until you get to that empty zone, which we've talked about, in which you expect a new move to break. Now, in order to make a proper prediction of which way that empty zone is going to break, you move back into that congestion zone, take a peek at the volume histograms beneath those smaller levels of participation. Are there higher or taller bars during the small rallies than the sell-offs, or vice versa? When a congestion breaks suddenly in some sort of stop-gunning move where a low is taken out through a hammer bar or a high is taken out through a shooting star, how much volume does that scare off? How many stops are triggered in that small environment where that shooting star pops above a breakout point and all the folks who thought that the breakout was coming jumped in only to find out that they were being taken out in a whipsaw? Well, how many people did that invite in? That gives you some idea of looking back as to how many stops were built up and how much interest might have been building just above the breakout point. Now, once supply is taken out above the market, or once supply is taken out below the market, it takes a while for it to regenerate. One good way to get an idea on how strong a breakout or a breakdown might be once you get near an empty zone interface is to look back at these stop gunning exercises. And you want them to appear just about midway through a congestion pattern. If you suspect a breakout to be in the same direction as the original stop gunning exercise. In other words, if there's a false breakout and it prints a shooting star, it'd be real nice for that to appear right in the middle of that congestion pattern so that after price pulls back, enough time passes so that demand can build up above the market again. And once that breakout point is reached again, there's a nice number of stops waiting to trigger a breakout. Now, alternatively, if you expect a market to move in the opposite direction from a stop gunning exercise, then you want that stop gunning exercise to take place very close to where the breakout in the opposite direction takes place. Now, the way this sort of happens is, again, using the example of an upside breakout that eventually occurs. Just before this upside breakout, you see this hammer move down that shoots down. It looks like the stock is breaking down, and there's a spike of volume. Then the market jumps back up across that whatever violation point it was, and you've got a nice hammer doji sitting down there. Now, very quickly after that point, you expect and you should pay attention to a breakout in the opposite direction. Demand has been taken out below that market. There's not a lot of sellers in that market anymore. So that's the point you should be looking to see if a breakout takes place in the opposite direction. Now, how do you tell one from the other where this one type of stop gun takes place in the middle of congestion versus the other kind that takes place very close to the breakout point? Well, it has to do with whether or not the price pattern is ripe enough yet. Price patterns have to take their time. They have to form the upper highs and lows, very often three lows and three highs. They have to start to get narrow range. They have to have that character of declining interest and declining volume participation that shows that pattern is ripe for a change of pace. Now, if these stop gunning exercises take place too early within the pattern, it's very—it's less likely that the breakout's going to take place in either direction because the pattern's not ripe yet. It hasn't completed its job of preparing a new set of buyers or sellers for that market. Now, one of the other ways that we look at volume is through accumulation distribution. Now, accumulation distribution, like regular volume patterns, is a very counterintuitive animal. Now, very, very similar to regular volume histograms, you can't always tell which way things are going just by looking at very short-term participation. Accumulation tends to lead or lag price action, and it can lead or lag it for a fairly long period of time. What you want to try to look for is the extremes where accumulation is much, much stronger or distribution is much, much weaker than the current price. At the point where there's enough tension on the spring, the market can then thrust forward where price will just shoot forward to try to join its cousin. In other words, if there's very strong accumulation, but price is just sitting there for a fairly long period of time. You can't base very short-term decisions on it, but you want to remain aware of the point where the stress is so great between that great accumulation and price just sitting there that when price starts to spring forward in the direction of that accumulation, it's going to spring pretty fast. Now, this tension on the spring is really a very important place of where we look for where we look at breakout and breakdown points. The other way to look at accumulation distribution, especially with something like an unbalanced volume indicator, is pay very close attention to these volume indicators, these accumulation distribution readings at new market highs and lows. These are the points in time and space where they become the most important. Right at a new high, you want accumulation to exceed the prior high. At a new low, you want distribution to exceed the prior low. When you don't have that, it sets up a divergence so that very often, especially say at a new high, the market's got to pause until it builds up enough participation that it's ready to move higher. But very often, alternatively, when accumulation is leading price and price reaches a new high, price doesn't even have to base anymore. Price could just take off and keep on running because there's so much support behind that market. There's so many people involved in that market that it doesn't need to stop. It doesn't need to catch its breath. It doesn't care that it's overbought. It's ready to move on to into an escalating series in a momentum market.